me back with my head foremost for 6 or 7 spears. It was impossible to recover myself till I came to the bottom. My head rebounded once or twice from the edge of the stone stairs, but it felt to me exactly as if I had fallen on a cushion or a pillow. Dr. Douglas ran out sufficiently affrighted, but he needed not, for I rose as well as ever, having received no damage but the loss of a little skin from 1 or 2 of my fingers. God give his angels charge over us to keep us in all our ways. Wednesday the 26th, I preached at Thirst. Thursday the 27th at York, Friday the 28th, I entered into my 80th year. But blessed be God, my time is not labor and sorrow. I find no more pain or bodily infirmities than at 25. This I still impute, 1, to the power of God fitting me for what he calls me to, 2, traveling 4 or 5,000 miles a year, 3, to my sleeping night or day whenever I want it, 4, to my rising at a set hour, and 5, to my constant preaching, particularly in the morning. Saturday, July 6th, I came to Birmingham and preached once more in the old dreary preaching house. Sunday the 7th, I opened the new house at 8, and it contained the people well, but not in the evening. Many were then constrained to go away. In the middle of the sermon, a huge noise was heard, caused by the breaking of a bench on which some people stood. None of them was hurt, yet it occasioned a general panic at first, but in a few minutes all was quiet. Sunday the 14th, I heard a sermon in the old church at Birmingham, which the preacher uttered with great vehemence against these harebrained, itinerant enthusiasts, but he totally missed his mark, having not the least conception of the persons whom he undertook to describe. No repose for Wesley. Wednesday the 17th, I went on to Leicester. Thursday the 18th to Northampton, and Friday the 19th to Hinksworth in Herefordshire. Adjoining Miss Harvey's house is a pleasant garden, and she has made a shady walk around the neighboring meadows. How gladly could I repose a while here. But repose is not for me in this world. In the evening many of the villagers flocked together, so that her great hall was well filled. I would fain hope some of them receive the seed in good ground, and will bring forth fruit with patience. Saturday the 20th, we reached London. All the following week the congregations were uncommonly large. Wednesday the 24th, my brother and I paid our last visit to Lewisham and spent a few pensive hours with the relief of our good friend, Mr. Blackwell. We took one more walk round the garden and meadow, which he took so much pains to improve. Upwards of 40 years, this has been my place of retirement when I could spare 2 or 3 days from London. Tuesday, August 13th, being obliged to leave London a little sooner than I intended, I concluded the conference today and desired all our brethren to observe it as a day of solemn thanksgiving. At 3 in the afternoon, I took coach. About 1 on Wednesday morning, we were informed that 3 highwaymen were on the road before us and had robbed all the coaches that had passed, some of them within an hour or two. I felt no uneasiness on the account, knowing that God would take care of us. And he did so, for before we came to the spot, all the highwaymen were taken. So we went on unmolested, and early in the afternoon came safe to Bristol. Tuesday the 15th, I set out for the West, preached at Taunton in the evening, Friday noon at Cullumpton, and in the evening at Exeter. A Christian Bishop's Furniture. Sunday 18th, I was much pleased with the decent behavior of the whole congregation at the cathedral, as also with the solemn music at the post-communion, one of the finest compositions I ever heard. The bishop inviting me to dinner, I could not but observe, 1, a lovely situation of the palace covered with trees and as rural and retired as if it was quite in the country. 2, the plainness of the furniture, not costly or showy, but just fit for a redundant, plain Christian bishop. 3, the dinner sufficient but hot and good, but not delicate. 4, the propriety of the company, 5 clergymen and 4 of the aldermen. And 5, the genuine, unaffected courtesy of the bishop, who I hope will be a blessing to his whole diocese. We set out early in the morning, Monday the 19th, and in the afternoon came to Plymouth. I preached in the evening and at 5 and 12 on Tuesday, proposing to preach in the square at the dock in the evening, but the rain prevented. However, I did so on Wednesday evening. A little before I concluded, the commanding officer came into the square with his regiment. but he immediately stopped the drums and drew up all his men in order on the high side of the square. They were all still as night, nor did any of them stir till I had pronounced the blessing. The tide is now turned. 1783, Wednesday, January 1st. May I begin to live today, Sunday the 5th. We met to renew our covenant with God. We never meet on this occasion without a blessing, but I do not know that we ever had so large a congregation before. Sunday the 19th, I preach at St. Thomas Church in the afternoon and at St. Swithin's in the evening. The tide is now turned so that I have more invitations to preach in churches than I can accept of. Friday, February 21. At our yearly meeting for this purpose, we examined our yearly accounts and found the money, just answering the expense, was upwards of £3,000 a year. But that is nothing to me. What I receive of it yearly is neither more nor less than £30. Sunday, June 1st. I was refreshed by the very sight of the congregation at the new chapel in London. Monday the 2nd and the following days I employed in settling my business and preparing for my little excursion. Wednesday the 11th I took coach with Mr. Brackenbury, Broadbent, and Whitfield, and in the evening we reached Harwich. I went immediately to Dr. Jones, who received me in the most affectionate manner. About 9 in the morning we sailed, and at 9 on Friday the 13th landed at Helvoetsluis. Wesley visits Holland. Here we hired a coach for Briel, but were forced to hire a wagon also to carry a box which one of us could have carried on his shoulders. At Briel, we took a boat to Rotterdam. We had not been long there when Mr. Bennett, a bookseller who had invited me to his house, called upon me. But as Mr. Loyal, the minister of the Scotch congregation, had invited me, he gave up his claim and went with us to Mr. Loyal's. I found a friendly, sensible, hospitable, and am persuaded a pious man. We took a walk together round the town, all as clean as a gentleman's parlor. Many of the houses are as high as those in the main street at Edinburgh, and the canals running through the chief streets make them convenient as well as pleasant, bringing the merchants' goods up to their doors. Stately trees grow on all their banks. The whole town is encompassed with a double row of elms, so that one may walk all around it in the shade. Saturday the 14th, I had much conversation with the two English ministers, sensible, well-bred, serious men. These, as well as Mr. Loyal, were very willing I should preach in their churches, but they thought it would be best for me to preach in the Episcopal Church. By our conversing freely together, many prejudices were removed, and all our hearts seemed to be united together. In the evening, we again took a walk around the town, and I observed, 1, many of the houses are higher than most in Edinburgh. It is true, they have not so many stories, but each story is far loftier. 2, the streets, the outside and inside of their houses, in every part, doors, windows, wells, staircases, furniture, even floors, are kept so nicely clean, you cannot find a speck of dirt. 3, there is such a grandeur and elegance in the fronts of the large houses that I never saw elsewhere, and such a profusion of marble within, particularly in their lower floors and staircases, as I wonder other nations do not imitate. 4, the women and children, which I least of all expected, were in general the most beautiful I ever saw. They were surprisingly fair and had an inexpressible air of innocence in their countenance. 5, this was wonderfully set off by their dress, which was simplex munditus, plain and neat in the highest degree. 6, it has lately been observed that growing vegetables greatly resist putridity, so there is a use in their numerous rows of trees, which was not thought of at first. The elms balance the canals, preventing the putrefaction which those otherwise might produce. The Reverend Dutch. One little circumstance I observed, which I suppose is peculiar to Holland. To most chamber windows, a looking-glass is placed on the outside of the sash, so as to show the whole street, with all the passengers. There is something very pleasing in these moving pictures. Are they found in no other country? Sunday the 15th. The Episcopal Church is not quite so large as the chapel in West Street. It is very elegant, both without and within. The service began at 9:30. Such a congregation had not often been there before. I preached on God created man in his own image, Genesis 1:27. The people seemed all but their attention dead. In the afternoon, the church was so filled, as they informed me, it had not been for these 50 years. I preached on, God hath given us eternal life, and this life is in His Son. 1 John 5:11. I believe God applied it to many hearts. Were it only for this hour, I am glad I came to Holland. One thing which I peculiarly observed was this, and the same in all the churches in Holland. At coming in, no one looks on the right or left hand, or bows or curtsies to anyone, but all go straight forward to their seats as if no other person were in the place. During the service, none turns his head on either side or looks at anything but his book or the minister, and in going out, none take notice of anyone, but all go straight forward till they are in the open air. After church, an English gentleman invited me to his country house not half a mile from the town. I scarcely ever saw so pretty a place. The garden before the house was in three partitions, each quite different from the others. The house lay between this and another garden, nothing like any of the others, from which you look through a beautiful summer house, washed by a small stream into rich pastures filled with cattle. We sat under an arbor of stately trees between the front and back gardens. Here were four such children, I suppose 7, 6, 5, and 3 years old, as I never saw before in one family. Such inexpressible beauty and innocence shone together. In the evening I attended the service of the great Dutch church, as large as most of our cathedrals. The organ, like those in all the Dutch churches, was elegantly painted and gilded, and the tunes that were sung were very lively and yet solemn. Monday the 16th, we set out in a trackschuit riverboat for The Hague. By the way, we saw curiosity. The gallows near the canal, surrounded with a knot of beautiful trees, so the dying man will have one pleasant prospect here, whatever befalls him hereafter. At 11 we came to Delft, a large, handsome town. Here we spent an hour at a merchant's house, who, as well as his wife, a very agreeable woman, seemed both to fear and to love God. Afterward we saw the great church, I think nearly, if not quite, as long as York Minster. It is exceedingly light and elegant within, and every part is kept exquisitely clean. The tomb of William I is much admired, particularly his statue, which has more life than one would think could be expressed in brass. The beautiful Hague. When we came to The Hague, though we had heard much of it, we were not disappointed. It is indeed beautiful beyond expression. Many of the houses are exceedingly grand and are finely intermixed with water and wood, yet are not too close, but so as to be sufficiently ventilated by the air. Being invited to tea by Madame de Vassenaar, one of the first quality in The Hague, I waited upon her in the afternoon. She received us with that easy openness and affability which is almost peculiar to Christians and persons of quality. Soon after came 10 or 12 ladies more, who seemed to be of her own rank, though dressed quite plainly, and 2 most agreeable gentlemen. One of them, I afterward understood, was a colonel in the prince's guards. After tea I expounded the 3 first verses of the 13th of the first epistle to the Corinthians. Captain M. interpreted sentence by sentence. I then prayed, and Colonel V. after me. I believe this hour was well employed. Tuesday the 17th, as we walked over the place, we saw the Swiss guards at their exercise. They are a fine body of men, taller, I suppose, than any English regiment, and they all wear large black whiskers, which they take care to keep as black as their boots. Afterward, we saw the gardens at the old palace, beautifully laid out with a large piece of water in the middle and a canal at each end. The open walks in it are pleasant, but the shady serpentine walks are far pleasanter. We dined at Mrs. L.'s in such a family as I have seldom seen. Her mother, upwards of 70, seemed to be continually rejoicing in God her Savior. The daughter breathes the same spirit, and her grandchildren, 3 little girls and a boy, seem to be all love. I have not seen 4 such children together in all England. A gentleman coming in after dinner, I found a particular desire to pray for them. In a little while he melted into tears, as indeed did most of the company. Wednesday the 18th. In the afternoon, Madame de Vassenaar invited us to a meeting at a neighboring lady's house. I expounded Galatians 6:14, and Mr. M. interpreted as before. at Leiden in Amsterdam. Thursday the 19th, we took boat at 7. Mrs. L. and one of her relations, being unwilling to part so soon, bore us company to Leiden, a large and populous town, but not so pleasant as Rotterdam. In the afternoon, we went on to Haarlem, where a plain good man and his wife received us in a most affectionate manner. At 6, we took boat again. As it was filled from end to end, I was afraid we should not have a very pleasant journey. After Mr. Ferguson had told the people who we were, we made a slight excuse and sang a hymn. They were all attention. We then talked a little by means of our interpreter and desired that any of them who pleased would sing. 4 persons did so and sang well. After a while we sang again, so did 1 or 2 of them, and all our hearts were strangely knit together, so that when we came to Amsterdam they dismissed us with abundance of blessings. Friday the 20th, we breakfasted at Mr. Ferguson's near the heart of the city. At 11 we drank coffee, the custom in Holland, at Mr. J's, a merchant, whose dining room is covered, both walls and ceiling, with the most beautiful paintings. He and his lady walked with us in the afternoon to the Stadthaus, perhaps the grandest building of the kind in Europe. The great hall is a noble room indeed, nearly as large as that of Christ Church in Oxford. But I have neither time nor inclination to describe particularly this amazing structure. The warmly affectionate Dutch. Sunday the 22nd. I went to the new church, so-called still, though 400 or 500 years old. It is larger, higher, and better illuminated than most of our cathedrals. The screen that divides the church from the choir is of polished brass and shines like gold. I understood the psalms that were sung and the text well, and a little of the sermon, which Mr. D.H. delivered with great earnestness. At 2 I began the service at the English church, an elegant building about the size of West Street Chapel. Only it has no galleries, nor have any of the churches in Holland. I preached on Isaiah 55, 6 and 7, and I am persuaded many received the truth in the love thereof. After dinner, Mrs. J. took me in a coach to the Mere, and thence round the country to Zeeburg. I never saw such a country before. I suppose there is no such summer country in Europe. From Amsterdam to Mere is all a train of the most delightful gardens. Turning upon the left, you then open upon the Texel, which spreads into a sea. Zeeburg itself is a little house built on the edge of it, which commands both a land and a sea prospect. What is wanting to make the inhabitants happy but the knowledge and love of God? Wednesday the 25th, we took boat for Haarlem. The great church here is a noble structure, equaled by few cathedrals in England, either in length, breadth, or height. The organ is the largest I ever saw and is said to be the finest in Europe. Hence we went to Mr. Van Kay's, whose wife was convinced of sin and justified by reading Mr. Whitefield's sermons. Here we were, as at home. Before dinner, we took a walk in Haarlem Wood. It adjoins the town and is cut out in many shady walks, with lovely vistas shooting out every way. The walk from The Hague to Schwieling is pleasant, those near Amsterdam more so, but these exceed them all. We returned in the afternoon to Amsterdam and in the evening took leave of as many of our friends as we could. How entirely were we mistaken in the Hollanders, supposing them to be of a cold, phlegmatic, unfriendly temper. I have not met with a more warmly affectionate people in all Europe. No, not in Ireland. Wesley at Utrecht. Thursday the 26th. Our friends having largely provided us with wine and fruits for our little journey, we took boat in a lovely morning for Utrecht. Utrecht has much the look of an English town. The streets are broad and have many noble houses. In quietness and stillness, it much resembles Oxford. The country all round is like a garden, and the people I conversed with are not only civil and hospitable, but friendly and affectionate, even as those at Amsterdam. Monday the 30th, we hired a coach for Rotterdam at 1/2 crown per head. We dined at Gouda at Mr. Van Fluten's, a minister of the town who received